stop? Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
Oh, it'll be all right, Hal. Don't worry about the truth. The truth will set you free. There are people out there today, tonight, who are afraid of the truth. This is Friday night. And it's the Hour of Truth brought to you by Missouri Grassroots Radio, Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Exciting things continue to happen as the legislative session begins to wind down. SCR 38, the state repeal amendment, the petition method for asking for amendments is being promised a hearing in the Senate. It's in the Senate Rules Committee. You need to get on the emails to the Senate Rules Committee and let them know that this is something we want to happen. Mike Moon will join us here in a bit. We're going to talk about the hearings upcoming on H.R. 476. H.R. 476 is Mike Moon's article of impeachment. There are three, and they will all be heard. When Mike gets here, we'll go over the dates, times, and rooms for those. It's a two-day hearing, and we'll run over that when Mike joins us. But specifically, Mike Moon's H.R. 476, that is my favorite. That article impeaches Governor Nixon for failing, refusing even to set election dates for the quarter of a million Missourians who've been denied representation in Jefferson City for up to a year now. It's serious business right there. This impeachment article strikes right at the heart of representative government, right at the heart of our Republican form of government, and right at the heart of the constitutional, direct constitutional responsibility of the governor of the state of Missouri. The other two articles of impeachment that will be heard at the same time is H.R. 380, Marshall's. That is an article of impeachment that, in my mind, has some serious problems. Marshall filed an article of impeachment first and early in the session against the governor for making an executive order that said that gay people who were married in another state and relocated to Missouri could file joint state tax returns. Now, as we've talked about in the weeks past, but if you're a first-time listener or haven't caught on to this, I'd be interested in hearing from you at 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on this, but here's my thoughts. Missouri is in a bind on this because state law requires that if you file a federal joint return, you file a state joint return. That is, if you file federal combined, you have to file state combined. Now, gay couples legally married in another state, whether Missouri recognizes that marriage for any Missouri purposes or not, file a federal joint return. So they are then required by Missouri law to file a combined federal return. It seems to me that before we can move forward with an article of impeachment on this, we have got to change the Missouri law. And I don't see anything in the legislative calendar that changes that law. Then we have H.R. 923, H.R. 923, I was right. And that is Rick Bratton's article of impeachment. And this is a problem, maybe the most popular, but treads on thin water or thin ice in my mind. And it impeaches the governor for not firing people over the real ID violations of CCW permit holders being released to the federal government. That's fine. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. You know, impeachment is an indictment. And after the indictment, then there's a trial. So impeachment isn't, okay, when the House passes this article of impeachment, the guy's kicked out. It's an indictment. It goes over to the Senate. Now, the Senate then doesn't get to vote on it or turn it down or even amend it. The Senate is then constitutionally bound to impanel judges to hear the case. At that point, the governor gets an attorney, and he is the defendant, and there's an actual trial. The governor presents evidence, and the state presents evidence. You're going to have a little trouble with 923, because there isn't a constitutional duty for the governor to fire people, or even to reprimand people. The governor does those things at his own discretion. Yeah, people broke the law. I don't hear a loud cry from either the Senate or the House, not loud enough to matter, that actual individuals who broke the law be charged with anything. I hear Matt Canobie talk about it on the radio on Saturday morning. I hear, I hear the local talk show hosts talking about it. I hear conservatives at meetings talk about it. But I don't hear any loud rumblings from the Missouri legislature that any of these actual individuals who've been identified, who this article of impeachment says the governor has a constitutional duty to reprimand or fire, I don't hear any loud call for them to be charged with a crime. They broke the law. I think the better direction to go with that is there rather than with Rick Bratton's amendment or impeachment call. Now, the impeachment call is certainly popular, and it will win him some votes. The same with Nick Marshall's. The impeachment call that, in my mind, is clearly a violation of the governor's constitutional duty is the one by Mike Moon, and that is the governor himself, personally, has a constitutional duty to call special elections when a seat is vacated. Those seats have been vacant for up to a year. A 250,000 people, a little more, in the state of Missouri are without representation in Jefferson City in those seats. That is a clear constitutional problem for the governor. And I believe you need to get on board, especially with 476. You do what you want with the others, they'll all be heard. While we're waiting for Mike, I'm going to go live mic with our in-studio buddy, Keith Carmichael. How's it going tonight, Keith?
Hey, it's a great evening. Beautiful evening in the Ozarks.
Beautiful day, yeah. Where are you at, Mike, or Keith?
Right now I'm in Clinton, Missouri.
In Clinton. Golden
Valley. We had a beautiful day there today, and, you know, we're going to have to mow grass. I know a lot of you folks down there in South Missouri have been mowing the yard maybe for a couple weeks, but
yeah,
we've had all those cold nights, and so we're not in any big hurry. I hear a couple mowers going right now, but we're putting it off as long as we have to, as long as we can.
Okay. Are you coming down to Freedom Talk tomorrow?
Going to be there.
All right.
I'm curious about what the format is going to be like, what we're really going to be hearing, and, you know, do you have any of the details you can tell us about what's going to be happening?
I know what Lloyd's going to talk about. I've talked to Lloyd a couple of times on the phone. He's going to talk, of course, about his state repeal amendment and the petition process for amending. I don't know what either Lemke or Kurtman are going to talk about. I'm sure that it'll be earth-shattering and popular. But I'm interested in seeing how that goes.
This is going to be like the very first one of a series, and I kind of visited with them briefly and at the Capitol here a couple weeks ago about what they're really what they're hoping to, you know, what the real purpose of these events are, what they're hoping to accomplish, and I really was impressed with the answer that I got back. I'm looking forward to attending this first one, and who knows if it may even travel over to the St. Louis area and go to the second one. I think that they have scheduled as well.
Yeah. I'm interested. For you folks listening, you'll have a little bit more insight than Keith and I into what's going on, because we'll certainly report back to you tomorrow night on the show as to how Freedom Talks is going and what happens there and what the format is. I'm not going to give away anything, because if it's good, I want you all to go. And you know me, if it's a waste of your time, I'll tell you so. But I don't think it will be. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to meeting a lot of people who I've never done anything but talk to. I assure you folks that I'm even less pretty in person than I am in voice. So there you can take that away with you. But I'm just one old man out here crying in the wilderness, trying to get people to catch on. We're still waiting for Mike. How's COS going? Anything new this week?
Well, I got to say that I've been traveling around the state for several weeks now, and I've been on your program with the same message that you know, talking about the genius of the framers of putting this process in the hands of state legislators. And, you know, I've run into some people that say, you know, you just can't trust anybody in government, and that's too broad a generalization. Obviously, they will admit that usually. But I've been out there telling folks that, you know, we've got some outstanding state legislators. I know they're not all perfect, and the more I meet them in person, the more impressed I am. You know, if they're not the right people, then we need to get the right people up there. But I guess I have to say, you know, I'm just going to be honest, that I'm a little disappointed. I hope they don't make liars out of me.
Well, I think it's important for folks to get that it isn't necessarily, and I personally advise against our delegates to this convention being state legislators. Yes, we count on the state legislators to call for the convention and to nominate or even select the delegates. But once the convention starts, you're not even relying on state legislators anymore. You have appealed to the supreme sovereign power of this country, the people. And I don't see I don't see how you can beat that myself. I mean, this is the people taking control, and even more so, Keith. Even more so when we get to what I say is where the real debate on any particular amendment comes about, and that is the ratification process.
It's a marathon, and it's going to be a process, but we're just in the very first process, you know. And I had to make a comment yesterday, kind of know the general makeup of the legislature. We know the general makeup of most of the committees. We know who the chairman is. We know what on many issues where the votes are there. Are we still online? I hear some crackling. I'm just going to continue and let you tell me.
I wanted to answer that phone, so I set down my headphone for a moment and let you go ahead and talk. I had a phone call. I wanted to see if that was Mike. I'll go ahead. Carry on.
Just let me finish my thought. I had to make a comment. I didn't know that, at least among Missouri, I didn't know that restraining the power and jurisdiction of the federal government was really a controversial issue with Missouri GOP. But it shouldn't be. I know there's some different sides to the issue itself, but I just didn't know that was a controversial issue. But evidently, it's turning out to be more of one than I thought. There continues to be support for restraining the federal government. Every day, we just see, no matter what news program we're watching, it's just one more upon the other stacked up. This government out of control and becoming not only coercive and abusive, and just I'm not sure what it's going to take to get people's attention, but I think people are beginning to wake up, and I hope those in the legislature, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, one informal, non-scientific survey showed that 73% of the people, and that was a survey of really conservatives, Ron Calzone's list, 73% of the people are in favor of the convention of states. So I'm a little disappointed that we haven't gotten to the floor. You were the one that mentioned, by the 14th we ought to be on the floor of the House, and
yes,
and we're not there.
Yeah, we're in the waning part of this session, and we need to get this thing moving. You folks need to go to house.mo.gov. You need to get a hold of the chair, and I'm sorry, Keith, I don't have the names and addresses in front of me. I'll tell you what, though, we will post those online again tonight. Yeah, Caleb, you've got it right there?
Well, it's Caleb Jones is the chairman, and I think he's, I think they've been, one of my analysis is, I'm not really good at it, but I just know they have had a lot on their plate. You look across the last couple of weeks, and they've tackled some pretty good-sized issues, and they've had some late-night study sessions, and so I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. But I just, like I said, I've been traveling across the state everywhere I go saying, we've put – this is a genius of the framers. We've put this in the hands of state legislators, and, the further this goes, it makes me wonder. I mean, guys, let's get it moving and let's get it done. That's my message for them.
Okay, listeners, while you've got your pen and paper in hand, because we're waiting for Mike Moon, who's joined us now, and we'll be going to him in just a second, I'll give you Caleb Jones and Todd Richardson's phone numbers, and then I won't belabor the entire list of people until after we're done with Mike. His time is limited, and we want to make as good a use of that as we can. Caleb Jones is the chairman of that committee. You can call his office at 573-751-2134. Not you can call his office. You should call his office at 573-751-2134. That's Caleb Jones, the chairman of that committee. The vice chair of that committee is Todd Richardson. 573-751-4039. We need this out of executive session. We need this sent to the floor. Do pass. We need a floor debate, and we need to get that thing moving. If we wait till next session, we're knocked back to the very beginning. Speaking of getting things moving, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing very well, David. And hey,
how
Keith.
I'm sorry. I muted Keith. Hold on. We'll get him back.
Oh, okay.
That's all right. Okay, Keith. Mike to you.
Oh, yeah, you guys. You guys have a. I called in to listen this evening, so good to hear you, Mike. And you guys have a good evening. I may be feeding my face where I'm listening to you, but thanks for taking.
You and I'll talk later again, Keith, about this need to get this this COS moving.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay,
Dave, if I could just make one point to add to what Keith said. He mentioned about the committee having a lot to do in the last week or so. And I had some talks with committee members this week as well, late in the week, asking why it's not moving. And certainly I'm a little frustrated in the whole process. But I talked to Todd Richardson in particular, and he is he's a right-minded he is considerable. I think he will take a look at it as well, the Convention of States, and he's willing to vote the COS application out of committee so we can get it to the floor. And that's really all I'm asking. And I did a whip count before we got the votes, so now we just need to have Chairman Jones bring it up in executive session and vote it out.
Okay. And that's up to you folks. They do have a lot to do, and they have their priorities set, and you listeners, you can have some impact on those priorities. So make those phone calls, send those emails, and aside from the emails and the phone calls to the members of the committee, also get a hold of your own representative and have them do as Mike has done. Now, it's Mike's bill, so he has a vested interest in tracking this thing down. But the more legislators who get a hold of Jones and Richardson and say, hey, look, I've got people asking about this, that's a little bit more sway too, isn't it, Mike?
It certainly is. And so, I think at first thought, they thought we didn't have the votes to get it out, but the whip count clearly show that we do.
Good. Has anybody done a count of the full house?
That was done some time ago. I haven't had a recent count. We still have some more persuading to do, I believe. So okay. I'm not going to count my chickens before they hatch. So I would encourage, just as you have, all the listeners contact their own representatives and encourage them to support the bill too.
Okay. Great. Let's move on to 476. Pretty exciting news coming up here next week, right?
Yes, sir. Originally, the hearing for the articles of impeachment was scheduled for Tuesday. That has been postponed until the next day, Wednesday at noon. I believe a two-hour period has been allotted to hear all three articles filed by Representatives Marshall and Bratton and myself. It's going to be an interesting session, I believe. And now I want to point out too that these three articles were just lying, had not been referred to committee. And I strongly believe, because listeners and other citizens across the state were interested in seeing these things heard, that they called. And a couple of weeks ago, the speaker contacted me and asked if I wanted my articles referred to committee, and certainly I did. And I believe it's because of the support from others in the state of Missouri that made it happen.
Mike, are we going to be behind the eight ball here because of the lateness of the session?
That could be. I think, though, that if we get it to the floor, and
right.
that's something we're going to strongly urge, as long as the House passes it, the Senate, I don't believe will be under the gun like we are, because they
right.
have to, they don't have to vote on it. They're just charged with selecting the jurors. So we still have time to get this done.
Exactly. Exactly. And that is what I was telling the folks before you got here is, there's no debate in the Senate. There's no, there of course is no veto. All the Senate does is, impanel the judges. And that is a constitutional duty of the Senate. It's not something that the Senate can constitutionally shirk because there's only 2 days left in the session or for any reason at all. I mean, once the articles are shot over there, then they have to do that, don't they?
Right. Their constitutional charge is to do so without delay.
Right.
So it could be 14 months. And I say that tongue-in-cheek because
yeah.
that's the amount of time that will have passed when August 5th election comes that he delayed in calling for Jason Smith's seat. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm having a little fun with that.
Yeah, that's and that is, as I was telling folks before you joined us, that is the crux of 476. I went through 476 with them. I went through 380 and 923. And I have to tell you that seriously, 476 is my favorite of the three. I think it has zero problems in evidence. I think it has zero problems in a solid constitutional violations by the governor, shirking solid constitutional duties, the other two, I was telling folks, I search up and down daily the legislative agenda, the bills that have been filed, and the problem in my mind with 380, Mike, is I don't see anyone posing a bill, tell me if I've missed it, on either side of the rotunda there, that actually changes the law in Missouri that requires, in fact, anyone who files a joint federal return to file a joint state return.
I don't know that there's a requirement, but I believe it's just the fact that he said that because the federal government allows it, then it would be appropriate that Missouri allow their same-sex married couples that aren't even recognized in the state to do the same. And
no,
so I think there is a foundation that can be argued there. And I honestly haven't weighed it with the other two articles that have been submitted, but I think there's some merit to that particular one as well.
Oh, I don't want to say there's no merit to it. I mean, there's probably some merit there, but and I'm not suggesting that the governor's executive order requires gay couples whose marriage is recognized in another state to file. What I'm saying is that Missouri law requires you and me to file combined Missouri if we filed a joint federal.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm understanding what you're saying now.
So,
yeah.
So, see, I see that as being the glitch there. I don't see any legislation posed by either House to change that and thereby make something that Governor Nixon did unjustifiable. Governor's claim is going to be, well, I had to do that. I mean, we have a law in Missouri that says if you file a joint federal, you must file a combined Missouri.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And then,
yeah.
And then Rick Bratton's, I know that's the most popular. I hear Kenobi railing about that every Saturday morning. And again, you know, I'm in favor of it, just as I am Nick Marshall's, but I see that as something that's gonna rely on something other than the governor failed in his constitutional duty. I mean, it actually impeaches the governor for not firing people and reprimanding people. And while what people did clearly is a violation, an outright and blatant violation of written law, there is no constitutional requirement for the governor to fire or reprimand anyone. And again, as I look up and down the legislation filed, I don't see anyone clamoring. I see a couple of voices out there. I hear a couple of voices, but I don't see anyone clamoring, as you and Matt talk about every Saturday morning, for actual individuals who broke the law to be in any way penalized for that.
Yeah, one of the concerns I have with Rick's articles, and I'd like to see them pushed as far as they can be pushed, has to do with the investigative committee that was impaneled last summer.
Right.
I really thought more would come of that than did, and when you had heads of departments state that they didn't have communication with the governor during this period of time, just seems outlandish. I mean, I don't know of any CEOs who run a business and not direct or receive some reporting back from department heads.
Right.
And there were some emails that I saw that gave sensitive information on the website or the link to the list of names with passwords in the same email. And so I know that we can't perhaps indict someone on vicarious liability charges, but that is in essence what happened. The governor, whether directed firsthand or not, had people under his lines of authority that allowed things to happen, whether knowing or unknowingly, that is in violation of state law. And in particular, the sharing of those 182,000 or so names of people with CCWs.
Oh, yeah,
so,
exactly.
And that's what I'm primarily disappointed in. The committee really let them go get off scot-free with a little more than a slap on the wrist. And so I'm disappointed in that, and also with the Real ID being at least fostered in the state. When you had Janet Reno sending a letter of thanks to the governor for his compliance. And
right.
then we had department heads say, well, even though these things were being done, we didn't intend to do it. So for that reason, we're not liable. It makes no sense at all.
You're
like
actually right.
Traveling down the road at a high rate of speed and get stopped and say, well, you know, I might have been doing that, but I didn't intend to speed. Well, I've done it, and there's a fine to pay for it, I'm sure. So it's a little frustrating.
Okay. Real quick, I know your time is limited tonight. I want to hear how this right to work thing is doing. Is that going to make it through the House?
Well,
this week?
This may please you to hear. I'm not sure exactly how this is coming out, because I know that we differ on exactly how we view this. Of course, you probably remember we only got 78 votes in favor, and the board was open quite a while. There were at least 11 representatives who didn't show up for the vote. And,
right.
I'm concerned that I don't know that what the whip count is, actually. I've heard some say that it's positive. I haven't actually heard the leadership say when or if they're going to bring it back up. But if they do, they're not going to unless they know they've got 82 votes.
Right.
And it's still on the calendar, but your guess is as good as mine at this point as to whether that vote will be taken again this coming week. And if not, then there are a lot of people who are having some serious conversations directed at them because of how they voted or their lack of vote, and probably the
right.
lack of vote, because I think, you know, I give credit to the speaker and the others who tell us you can vote however you wish, just justify your vote.
Right.
And I'm really glad about that, because that way you don't feel like you've got your hand wrenched behind your back and you've got a lot of pressure. But for not showing up purposely, that's concerning to me, because we're elected for a purpose. And I voted the way that my district wanted me to vote. I had some, of course, who contacted me and were against the right-to-work legislation, but the majority are in favor, and that's essentially why I voted in favor of it. And so if I'm going to lay out just because I'm fearful of bad press or something to that nature, then that's not what I've been called to do. And so if anyone did that on purpose, I hope they think long and hard about what they're supposed to be doing. And if their district wants it, vote the way their district wants them to vote. I think that's what we should be doing.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I was somewhat taken aback myself. I think it was last Sunday's paper that actually had quite an extensive article, although the papers all week have not had a word about anything going on in the state of Nevada. They did have quite an extensive article about two or three senators who just came right out and said, yeah, I missed the vote on purpose because I didn't want to have to deal with the problems that it would bring me.
Oh man.
Yeah. That's pretty sad in my mind. Yeah, I'm with you, you know, go vote. You know, maybe you vote, against your own wishes in favor of your, there's two states of mind, that are both valid for the representative form of government. And one is, I am a steward of the people's will, and mm-hmm. that is a guy who says or woman who says, well, yeah, I don't particularly think this is right, but my email is going 10 to 4 in favor, so I'm gonna do it this way.
Yeah.
Of course, provided that what the people want isn't something that's blatantly unconstitutional.
Right.
You can't yeah. do that. You can't. Well, I'm going to go ahead and vote for a new slavery because my people want it. Yeah, you can't do something like that. But then there is the and I've forgotten the name of it, but it's another form or philosophy of government, and that is I'm here to do what is right. And I told people when they elected me how I felt about these issues, and so I don't care what the mail is saying. I'm going to vote my conscience. Both of those are justifiable, I guess, but I have more respect for the stewardship, which is what you're talking about. You know, I'm actually here as a representative of the people of my district. And speaking of that, how's the campaign going, Mike?
Well, it's still slow moving. I'm spending more time doing work at the Capitol, and it seems like when I'm back home, in the last couple of weekends anyway, I wasn't home very long at all. So
the
campaign is moving at a snail's pace.
That is a definite disadvantage to an incumbent being primaried, isn't it?
I think the
heat of the race, really, or at least the starting line and the fast sprint to get the lead happens while you're in session and very, very busy.
Yeah. Well, I'm hopeful that the votes that I'm taking and the legislation that I'm sponsoring and the votes that I'm taking particularly will resonate with the folks in the county, And
right.
So I'm just hopeful there won't be a huge disadvantage. So when the second week of May has passed, then we'll have to hit the ground running and not stop until August 6th.
Okay. What do you want to get in here tonight, Mike? Are you talking to Matt in the morning?
I'm planning to.
Okay.
You talked about what's on my heart primarily. There is another issue that I don't think I've talked about too much, but it has to do with the Department of Natural Resources. And I'm sure that you and the listeners are aware of how much pressure and the shackles that are being applied to us as a result of the Environmental Protection Agency. Here in our own state, we have 300 cities who are under the gun to upgrade their wastewater treatment facilities at an expense that will cripple many of the cities. I represent in Lawrence County one city, Miller, that for a little while now has been under a mandate by the EPA to upgrade their wastewater treatment facility. And if you can imagine a town that has less than 700 citizens, and about 16% are on food stamps and a little better than 10% are below poverty level, an aging population, and there really is no industry in the town to speak of. And of those less than 700 residents, just a little over 300 actually utilize the wastewater treatment facility. And otherwise, they have septic systems. And so the EPA standard for ammonia, and that's the one that's at issue here, says that you cannot have greater than 1.8 parts per million of effluent flowing from the treatment system into a live water stream. And there is a two-lagoon system they're utilizing, and for the past about 50 years, they've had the same or similar system, and it's worked extremely well. In fact, they've only had 3 monthly testing that have been sent to an independent lab that have come outside the requisite standards put up by the EPA. And so currently their ammonia limits are readings are 1.84 parts per million. Now, that's not a lot. 1.8, they're at 1.84. The water that flows out of the second lagoon with the treated water has fish right at the mouth of the river, and they're still alive. There's no harm environmentally. There's been no illness as a result of the 1.84 parts per million of ammonia. And so the EPA is standing firm on the standard, though, and the DNR is their state arm to enforce. And so what I did as a result of this particular requirement, first had meetings with the DNR, and they held firm that, well, we need to enforce the EPA ruling. And so I asked what the alternatives were, and it is, of course, up to upgrade, and at a cost of about $1.5 million. And they've already done an affordability study and found that it would be a high burden on the residents in the city. And I asked what would happen if they couldn't afford it. And they said, well, we'll do what we can to make it affordable, extending the terms of the loan, for example. And I said, well, that's not an issue. The system works. All we want to be is left alone. And that's not an option, however. And so in looking through the budget for the DNR, I found that there was $204 million that is federal funds that is sent to the state for the primary purpose of these wastewater treatment facilities for cities who are in some sort of need to upgrade. According to the EPA, they will loan this money to the cities, and it will be paid back with interest. And so our tax dollars from all across the country are being sent to the EPA or given to the EPA for use in Missouri's DNR at the tune of $204 million. So after a meeting with the DNR, I decided to get their way to get their attention, and I was hoping for more, but I filed an amendment to the bill, to their budget bill, that would strip out $204 million. And wouldn't you know, the morning of the budget, hearing or on the floor, the vote, DNR was at the door. And they said, we've heard about your problem in Miller. And they said, and by the way, a letter was to have been sent in January to Miller, but for some reason it was overlooked. And and they said, we want to know how we can help. And I said, well, we really just need a variance for the ammonia standards. Well, okay, we can provide that. And I was still naive, thinking that, well, a man's word is a man's word. So I went back into the session and was mentioning to another fellow who has a city with the same problem, and he asked me if I had that promise in writing, and I didn't ask for that. He said, well, you probably need to get that. And so I went out in the hallway, looked for them. They were nowhere to be found, so I called the office, and I requested a written affirmation of that promise, and told him that I needed it before noon, because in the afternoon we were having that budget to be voted on. And so they presented a letter, and the variance that I asked for was not included. And so I contacted them and said, well, where's this variance? We need a permanent variance for the city of Miller. And to make a long story short, they said that's a long, convoluted problem. It has to be worked out through lawsuits going all the way to the EPA, and they would be the only ones who could provide that. So when the budget came up, I offered the amendment to strip the $204 million and didn't have as much time as I needed. And had I been able to make a few more rounds, I probably could have gotten some more votes. But just off the cuff in that short time, we had 42 representatives vote in favor of doing that. And I was pretty tickled at that.
Yeah.
But the next morning, we had another meeting with the DNR. And this is what really was enlightening to me. We brought up all sorts of different issues and regulations through the EPA, and one of them was the air quality standard. And you may have heard of the burning ban, that or wood stove ban, I should say,
right?
That they have, where essentially what they're looking for is wood stoves that are manufactured in the future would not be able to emit any smoke out of the smokestack. And so some have catalysts. In fact, I have one with a catalyst, and when the catalyst is engaged, you can go outside and look, and there's literally no smoke. And I didn't buy this purposely for that reason, but it's been about 14 years ago. It was on sale, and I got it for a rock-bottom price, and I thought, well, that's pretty good. So that's why I have one with a catalyst. But a friend of mine, Tim Remley, who represents in the House, filed a bill that would allow the state to opt out of that particular EPA ruling, and I believe it's going to pass. And I brought that particular subject up, and they said, well, you know, we're not going to enforce that air quality. And I said, well, why not? And they said, well, you know, we can pick and choose what we do. And I said, well, what determines how you pick and what standards you choose to enforce? And they said, resources. And at that time, I knew exactly where they were going, so I was playing dumb, and I said, so tell me what resources you're talking about. Well, they said, we have to have the personnel to be able to enforce the standards, and then we have to have the money. And you can probably imagine what came to my mind immediately, and it was $204 million.
Yeah.
And so immediately I got to work on another bill, and I filed a bill that states pretty simply that the state of Missouri is not required to enforce any U.S. agency regulatory standards, whether it's the EPA or the USDA or the Department of Energy or whoever it is, doesn't matter, Department of Interior. So it would just cover the whole gamut. And so I took it around to a few folks, and it was well-liked by most. But then I got to a guy named Chris Kelly, who's a Democrat and pretty well-respected. And he is even supporting the Tim Remley bill that go against the wood-burning ban
right.
The EPA is offering. And he said, well, you know, I like this, but essentially what's going to happen if you leave it as is, you will essentially disallow any federal funds to come in Missouri for this matter. And I said, in my mind, I didn't say this outward, but I said, that's my point. I think we're going to wean ourselves off this federal money at some point. But I understand what he's saying, and it wouldn't get any support unless we had at least an opportunity to continue with what we're doing now, but then leave the door open to peel back the standards that we don't want to enforce. And so what I've got written now is a bill that after August 28, 2014, when the new laws go into effect, any new regulation that is handed down by any U.S. regulatory agency will not be required, the state will not be required to follow it, or the DNR or whoever, to enforce it unless it's been approved first by the General Assembly. And I think that's the way they all need to be. And
right.
So if we start there, then in future legislative sessions, we can begin going through with a fine-tooth comb all the other regulations that are currently in place and determine, is this really what we want to do? And if not, we can peel it or repeal it and continue on in that manner. I think that's what I'd like to see the federal government do as well, because they have, I'm sure you know and other listeners know as well, that the regulatory agencies have been given the authority by the U.S. Congress to make rules that, when you look at them, they carry the full force and effect of law.
That's
and
right.
That's unconstitutional, because if you look at Article 1, Section 1, it says all legislative power herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives. Pretty clear to me that only the House and the Senate can make laws.
That's
and
right.
Yet when you have any other branch of government, whether it's the president who has a pen and a phone, or the judiciary, or the federal regulatory agencies, if their rules or their opinions carry the full force and effect of law, then they violated the Constitution. And
absolutely
I talked
right.
to our congressional representatives, and they understand that historically they've been able to do that, but those decisions have not been ratified by the Congress. And that's the point that I'm trying to drive home to them, that, well, if you understand that they're not ratified, then stand up and call them on it.
Right.
And all these things need to be repealed.
You know, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That's one reason why I'm not opposed, as my buddy Lloyd Sloan is, to nullification, but I am very much in favor of his state repeal amendment. I mean, that gives the states the right to repeal any federal law, regulation, or finding, even a judicial mm-hmm. finding.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't mean to rattle on so long there, but I
appreciate you
giving me the time to...
Listen.
Something that,
I am
been heavy on my heart for a long time, and these guys in Miller, if we're not able to help them with this in a short time, it's going to be a ghost town.
Can we, Mike? Is there any way, or maybe you've already thought of this and done it? But I mean, it seems very popular in the House to exempt Missouri from the smoke standards. Can you just do a single bill to exempt us from the EPA ammonia standards for your folks in Miller?
Well, probably could have. It's too late this session. April 1st is the last day to file any legislation. But I think that we still have enough sway. In fact, the Representative Craig Redman, is on board with me on holding the DNR accountable, because, you know, they wield a lot of power. They have a heavy hand, and yet Mr. Redman is in control of their budget, and so he has a lot of authority, and I know that he wants to see this settled satisfactorily for all the 300 plus cities in Missouri, and he every couple days will contact me and say what's going on with the DNR, and are they working with Miller, and so far they're living up to their word. And we just need to continue to hold them accountable. And so I implore all the listeners to contact your representative. If you see a problem, sometimes it's not at the top of our minds, and we don't see it the same way you do. So if you see something that concerns you, whether it's with a regulatory agency or whatever, we should be willing to help you. And I hope you'll give us a ring whenever you need to meet our assistance.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Before we let Mike go, I want to make sure that all of you folks who still have your pencils and paper in your hand get a hold of Stanley Cox, 573-751-9774. 573-751-9774. Kevin Elmer, 573-751-3833. That's Kevin Elmer, 573-751-3833. Again, I'll go over the whole list with you here once we're free and clear. But those are that is the chairman and the vice chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. They will be having hearings this week. Tell us again the date, time, and place of the hearings, Mike.
At last report, it will be held April the 23rd, which is this Wednesday, at noon, and I believe the hearing room is 3.
Hold on just a second. I thought when they changed the date, they changed the room, too, but I've got that up. I've got that up right here. So
okay, good.
Room 1, Mike.
Room 1. Very good. Thank you, sir.
The 12 o'clock or immediately upon morning recess, hearing room 1, April 23rd, Wednesday, Missouri First, Ron Calzone's place. They have a witness form if you can't make it in person. Wednesday's midweek. I know it's hard for some of you to get away midweek to get up to Jefferson City. It's virtually impossible for me. I'll be doing a witness form. Go to Missouri First. And I can't remember if that's spelled out or not, but I will tell you folks before the end of the show. And we'll propagate that online at Missouri Grassroots Coalition and at as many places as we have contact with. We'll get the word out, those phone numbers. We'll get out the address for those witness forms. And we need to flood that hearing with people and witness forms. Mike, boy, we sure appreciate you up there.
Well, and David, I thank you for allowing me to be on as often as you allow me to. And I'm just grateful to all the listeners, for all those who have contacted their representatives with regard to the Convention of States, with the Articles of Impeachment. And we even have a food bill out there. That's not moving anywhere yet. We've had a hearing to allow people to grow and produce and sell without being regulated by the state.
Right.
It's something we need to have. So thank you again for all your efforts.
Well, thank you, Mike. We appreciate you. We're behind you. We're praying for you. We're hoping for you in this upcoming primary. We'll be doing everything we can to make sure that works out well for you, because when it works out well for you, it certainly works out well for us. We'll look forward to talking to you next week if you get the time. And every Friday night that we can get a hold of you, our time is your time. So Friday nights belong to you as far as I'm concerned. Thanks again, Mike, and we'll talk to you soon. Are you coming out to Freedom Talks?
I'm not aware of Freedom Talk. Tell me more.
Freedom Talks, Paul Kirkman, Lemke, and Lloyd Sloan are going to give presentations at the Library Center tomorrow at 10 o'clock.
Is that 10 a.m.?
It is, in fact, 10 a.m., yes, sir.
Okay. Well, it's not on my calendar, but I will see if I can work that in. I'm sure I appreciate you filling me in on that. So
yeah, I'm sure you're probably on the invite list. So just go to your Facebook page and click on events. It'll probably be all there. If not, shoot me an email and I'll get you all the exact stuff. But yeah, Kirkman, Lemke, and Sloan are going to give formal presentations, and a lot of people. Keith's going to be there. A lot of folks that I've never met, except just spoken to here and there, I'm going to be meeting. I'm looking forward to it, and see if you can make it.
I'll do it. Well, thanks for filling me in, and I'll look that up.
Take care, Mike.
Okay. Good night to you.
Good night, sir. Okay, that was Mike Moon. Absolute hero in my book, and well, I don't want to say that. The term hero is so overused, but he is a true patriot, no doubt about that. He is a True. You heard us talking about his philosophy of representing the people who he is there to represent. So here it is, folks. That hearing is Wednesday at noon. In my mind, that is the worst possible time for a hearing. Not that it's not 10 times better than not having a hearing at all, but there's politics afoot. You understand it. These hearings were not wanted, quite frankly. Speaker Jones made it clear that he was not in favor of impeaching the governor, or of even hearing about impeaching the governor. He was kind of forced by you folks, in my mind, to at least have a hearing on this. So they picked the Judiciary Committee to have the hearing. Not the most favorable, but again, you folks can bring pressure there. They picked a Wednesday at noon to have the hearing, and they picked as late a point as possible in the legislative session in hopes that they wouldn't have to bring this to executive committee and then bring it to the floor. Because understand what Mike was talking about, folks. When this thing comes to the floor and gets voted affirmatively, it's over. I mean, the impeachment part of the process is over. The indictment is handed down. And then there is no constitutional out for the Senate but to proceed to trial. They don't get to vote. They don't get to amend. Of course, there's no veto power in the executive branch for an article of impeachment. So you need to get a hold of these folks. That's Stanley Cox. He is the chairman of the committee. And Kevin Elmer is the vice chairman of the committee. Go to house.mo.gov for an entire list of the committee. I will be putting this out on Missouri Grassroots Coalition, the names of all the committee folks. For any representative or senator, their email address for a representative is firstname.lastname@house.mo.gov. So that's the representative's first name, then a dot, then their last name at house.mo.gov. .gov. For the Senate, it's the same thing, except it's senate.mo.gov instead of House. So get those emails going and email and call your own legislator. We're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to come back. We're going to talk about this right to work thing.
Come springtime, so let me hear you say, my love, I'm gonna stand my ground. They rise to me, I'll blow them down.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. Keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I fit in? Though the